whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We are happy to keep you company if that's what you need. Great to have you with us on the Hump Show, middle show of the work week. And as I say, we try to entertain and we want to make you smile, especially on this show. So for those of you who've listened for a long period of time, you know that we're big fans of Kevin Harlan. And he was calling the game actually in Boston between the Celtics and the Knicks. It was his TNT gig. So this is what Kevin Harlan, his weekend was like, and what he goes through on a pretty routine basis in the fall. He calls an NFL game on Sunday, wherever he happens to be, for TV, for CBS TV. Then he goes to the Monday night site because that's the game he does for Westwood One on Monday night. Did I say Sunday night? Sorry. Sunday game on TV, Monday night site for his Westwood One gig. And then on Tuesdays during the NBA season now, he ends up calling one of these games on national TV. When Sean Grandy said, had I worked the TNT game tonight, when we were talking to him last hour, what he meant is he was the standby. In every NBA arena they go to, they have to have a standby just in case Kevin doesn't make it. So you can imagine his life's a little hectic. He's traveling a ton. He's on the move a bit, which means he needs to have some snacks on the go. He needs to have snacks available. He's probably not eating three meals at quote unquote normal or typical times. Well, it bit him in the rear end on Monday night on Westwood One.
Go to goodrx.com or download the free. Oh, that's what. Don't eat popcorn at halftime. Holy smokes. Don't eat popcorn at halftime. Tell your children that when you put them to bed tonight. I got a game to do here.
Oh my gosh, that has happened to me before. I'll eat popcorn an hour earlier, and then for some reason, one of those little pieces of a kernel gets stuck in a place that it prevents you from fully talking or finishing a sentence, and then you have to stop and choke on the air. Oh yeah, that's happened to me.
When you put them to bed tonight.
Poor Kevin. I'm glad to know he's okay. He did survive to do the game on Tuesday on TNT. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm glad Kurt Warner had a good laugh out of it.
Actually, that was Devin McCourty. Yeah, so he was working with a different analyst on Mondays. I'm not sure if Kurt was still in London because they had the third of the London series. But yeah, this happened to not be Kurt. Otherwise, I can imagine he would have had a couple of ribs for Kevin Harlan because those two know each other pretty well. They've got quite the rapport. Don't eat popcorn at halftime. Or
holy smokes,
eat popcorn during your radio show, because yes, it does come back to bite you. The other thing is, if you ever tried eating peanut butter quickly, anything with peanut butter, eating it quickly and then hoping that you're able to swallow it and get back to talking, that's also not advisable. You know what else sticks in your throat? Triscuits. Have you ever had Triscuits?
Yes.
They have those little pieces, the thin little pieces of grain and the wheat, and they will get stuck in weird places in your throat as well. And all of a sudden you'll start to choke or cough.
Uh-oh.
Right? That's what I'm talking about. So I could teach an entire segment of my class at Syracuse on this. What not to eat when you are working a radio show or a broadcast.
And they also say, too, like carbonated beverages, like sodas and stuff. Don't drink that when you're doing a broadcast.
Is that because you might belch?
That, and I think it doesn't really help the mouth.
Oh, interesting. Okay. The sugar high, I know, you'll crash. So even if they're diet, or I prefer Coke Zero, Dr. Pepper Zero, you'll still get that same type of like, eek, and then the crash because of the artificial sweetener. Anyway, so Kevin Harlan, he's our favorite. We haven't had him on the show in quite a while, but I'm looking forward to it sometime this season. What we do have, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, and I did write to our friend Mike there at Westwood One, who's the executive producer, was doing some other stuff for him, so sent him an invoice, but also said thank you for setting up Ron Rivera. So longtime NFL head coach, Panthers, and previously, the Washington football team and the Commanders. Ron Rivera with us tomorrow night here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I'm nervous about that. Not nervous as in like, oh my gosh, my teeth are chattering nervous, but just a little professional nervousness about it because I want it to go really well. That's why I really care about it.
Just don't eat popcorn before it.
No. Uh-oh. I definitely will not be eating popcorn before my conversation with Ron Rivera.
Holy smokes.
All right, we'll get to some more football stuff coming up, but want you to send your questions for Ask Amy to our Facebook page or at Amy After Hours. Our phone number 855-212-4227. Joe is in Pittsburgh. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amy. Hey, I just wanted to tell you guys, I have an hour commute every night. So I go in at 7 and work till 3 in the morning. Whew. And the highlight of my day is listening to you guys. I mean, it is a joy just to hear you guys go back and forth. And I can always picture when you and Marco get in a discussion that you don't agree with, I can just picture him sitting there rolling his eyes like, really? but I do have a recommendation for your neighbor's light.
Oh, okay. Let me hear it.
I think you and Bob should buy your neighbor for Christmas a light with a motion detector.
Mm.
Because the only time that light will go off is if there's a motion, so it's off, you know, a majority of the night, right, unless, you know, someone walks by or a dog or a rabbit sets it off.
Deer, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one of those deals where, you know, you might have to swallow your pride, say, hey, we got you something. Why don't you put it up?
We got you a present.
Yeah. But I just wanted to call and thank you guys. It's a joy listening to you. I've been listening to you guys for years. It's the first time I've ever called.
Oh, cool.
But once again, I want to thank you very much.
Well, that's awesome. We're glad to keep you company, especially at those hours when you're driving. I've done a lot of late night driving, and it can be lonely. So good. We're glad that you have this to look forward to. Thanks so much for listening.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Joe. Be safe. Let's talk to Dean, who's in Jacksonville. Dean, welcome to the show.
Good evening. We're on the eve of the historic World Series. I just wanted to get your perspective. Mm-hmm. I talked to you a few weeks ago about the Detroit Tigers and what do you see for them in the future in 2025 as far as A.J. Hinch and how he managed the pitching staff. Is that model sustainable as far as just having, you know, Subel and then everybody else in the bullpen? And, you know, depending on these young arms, so, I mean, the relief pitcher for the Cleveland Indians had more in salary than the whole Detroit Tiger lineup. So what do you foresee for the Tigers for the 2025 season?
Well, I would hope that they would sink more money into their roster, as you point out. I think the fact that they went so quickly on this meteoric rise and were able to, from mid-August to the end of the regular season, erase a 10-game deficit, make the playoffs, they've certainly got a manager in place who is on the cutting edge when it comes to analytics and the way they use numbers, and that's something that A.J. Hinch has been fond of. But also, he's in touch with his guys. I think that's pretty clear. They spoke from man to man in Detroit about how much they enjoyed playing together and how hard it was when it came to an end. So I do think that because they were able to do what they did and not spend as much money, that they would likely be willing to invest more money. At least I hope that's the case. And as far as the model goes, where you have one great starter and then you work a bunch of bullpen starts, it's not completely crazy that teams do this. I mean, look at the Dodgers. Jack Flaherty and Walker Buehler's back, or he did 5 innings in his start in the NLCS. But for the most part, they keep, even in clinching games, they keep throwing out bullpen starts, and it happens to work for them. Now, I don't think it's advisable. I think if you've got 2-3 solid starters, you're in a much better situation. But yeah, pitching's so specialized now that it really has become, you know, like almost a game by game, situation by situation basis. I don't love it. Too many pitching changes is blah. So I hope the Tigers will invest more money. But I do think that the roster they have, the foundation they've built, and the fact that they were able to withstand a couple of really tough years and then put together kind of this run that now shows them what they can do and what they're capable of, it's such a confidence boost, and it really got to be a huge pick-me-up for the whole organization.
What did you think about the trade deadline? Trade of trading Flaherty to the Dodgers and bringing Sweeney to play shortstop, because that free agent shortstop they had. He got hurt, plus he just wasn't doing a very good job.
Right. Well, I think it was more about Flaherty, right? It was more about, at least for the that moment and the realistic chances of keeping him and that kind of thing. So, I never love that. I'm not a huge fan of trade deadline stuff when it comes to teams kind of dumping others off. But that's what I think is so amazing, that they made a run after that. And Flaherty's been... he's been hit or miss with the Dodgers. He's had some really good outings, including one in the playoffs. He's also had some where he's gotten blown up. Injuries, unfortunately, they stink, and there's not a whole lot you can do about them. But in that case, I think it was more about Flaherty being the most attractive pitcher on the market.
I just think the pitchers anymore these days, you can't depend on them. I mean, you know, they get hurt. I mean, they get a strain. Hmm. You know, they get a UCL. I mean, you know, the Tommy John surgery. I just think too many of them are pitching too young, and then when they get to the major leagues, I mean, their arms are just burned out. I mean, the days of Bob Gibson and Juan Marichal are over with as far as 300 innings.
Gosh, the days of, I mean, Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez, it's not that far back that you could imagine a pitcher going 7 or 8 innings, but there's only so few of them that they do now. And because of how much money teams are sinking into, especially high-level prospects and young pitchers, they're going to be a lot more careful. I wish that it wasn't the case anymore. But if you're going to win, you have to be able to navigate these, you know, these types of new stipulations from front offices that aren't willing to see their top level pitchers go out there and, you know, lay it all on the mound and leave it all out there and risk of life and limb, put everything on the line for their team. That's just not the case anymore.
I mean, do you foresee like the Pirates keeping Skeens around for a number of years?
Oh, gosh. I mean, if I was the Pirates, I'd be trying to sign him right now to a long-term deal. I don't know. Again, the Pirates, they certainly have something special. Not just him, but a couple of rookies in their starting rotation. People show up to watch those guys. But it's not like they haven't had incredible players before and they've allowed them to walk. I hope it's not the case anymore. I really do. But there's, I don't know. That would require potentially an entire change in philosophy for that organization.
Well, at least like last year, we had Texas and Arizona competing for the baseball championship. So, I mean, it's not like only, you know, large market teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees. So that's one good thing about the baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees haven't been to the World Series in 15 years. I know they spend a lot of money, but it's no guarantee that you're going to get there. And the Rays were in it, have been in it a couple of years, going back to 2020, their most recent. So, yeah, it's not always that way. You can spend more money and have high expectations, and you can do a whole lot of nothing if your guys are either injured or not performing. So I know that's the common complaint about this World Series, but these two teams haven't met on the stage since 1981. I mean, it's been decades. So I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
All right, sir. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much for your call in Jacksonville. 855-212-4227. I stumbled across this documentary, and I haven't been able to watch the whole thing yet, Pete, but it actually struck me as a potential show topic. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of what was the best of all time or rank them on a regular basis, but I like to do it every now and then sparingly. So this is a Prime Video documentary, which I think has got to be a nod to Prime wanting to get more into the sports space because, yeah, they've now got the NFL. They're seeing more subscribers jump on.
They need to.
Yeah, so I think they want to capitalize on this. So they did a recent documentary called Game 7, and it's just premiering this week. And it's a 5-part series, and it takes you some of the most memorable Game 7s in sports history. Baseball, hockey, basketball. So sadly, football's not a part of it because we just get the one and dones. But you get players who are part of them, and they kind of go through all the dramatic twists and turns. And so I was wondering if you could come up with some of the more recent Game 7s that would be worthy of a documentary, because I can think of two in baseball to be sure, but I was wondering if you had any thoughts about, now some of them are a little older, but there definitely are some that I would think would pop into your brain.
Personally, Game 786. That's one.
Okay.
Because everyone talks about Game 6.
Well, I was going to say, I think most people focus on the World Series Game 6 right. between the Red Sox and
game
the Mets.
Game 7,
yeah.
they the Mets were trailing in that game, too. So that Game 7, I think, is another way to talk about it.
Okay.
Also,
there's one hockey. I do not remember this, but I know people talk about it.
Oh, 94.
94
Rangers.
The Rangers and the Canucks.
Yep, 94 yep. Rangers. There's a bunch of basketball. You know what? I want to sit and look at it. I'll have a list of five, but yeah. The show.
Well, one that I remember very vividly, I can remember where I was, what I was doing, who I was with when Aaron Boone hit his home run, the 2003 ALCS, right, that pit the New York Yankees against the Boston Red Sox. Extra innings, right? It was extra innings when Aaron Boone, hit that home run.
Then you can go the following year.
Well, sure. And that was the one in which they rallied.
Right.
Yeah. So, but that's the one, the game seven specifically that I remember because it was in extra innings and because it's that iconic moment for Yankees fans. And also Aaron Boone is, I mean, I don't want to say he'd done nothing else in his career because that's unfair. But if you ask people anything else about Aaron Boone's career, no one's really going to have a whole lot to say except for this particular moment.
Then he gets hurt. He gets hurt in that offseason, and they trade for A-Rod.
Yeah.
It was a remarkable 6 months.
Just a nondescript player to have that moment in history, right? Not a Hall of Famer by any sorts. Goes into broadcasting. Now he's the manager. But no one can ever take that moment away from a Game 7. There's another one in here that I will always remember, too, because it had a rain delay, and it went into extra innings. The 2016 World Series that finally broke the Cubs drought, and that was over a century long. And I think so many Americans were on board because the Cubs became the sentimental favorite. And I think that would also be the case, for instance, if the Cleveland Browns ever got to a Super Bowl or other teams, even the Padres, who've never been to a World Series. Those types of teams that have been denied so many times have come close and haven't been able to do it. I do think it's fun when you get the rest of the country on board with that particular team or that particular storyline. Certainly that was a series between two franchises that had both seen extremely long droughts, but the Cubs, that was an iconic type of drought with the goat, the actual animal, the goat, and all that jazz.
Just a path for them to get there and what Theo Epstein did to get that team there is remarkable.
Yeah.
Just coming from the Red Sox to the Cubs, and they had to completely tear it down before they even thought about winning a championship. Yeah, that's a good another one. I was trying to just remember the timeline on it. 2016, Cavs Warriors Game 7.
Yeah,
that was I think that was
no one scored for the final 2.5 minutes except for Kyrie Irving with the three.
It had to be, to me, within the last 10 years, probably one of the most remarkable NBA finals I've seen.
For sure, the way that they came back from being down 3-1. But yeah, a Game 7 on the road at Oracle. Mm-hmm. The place was so tense. I was tense and no one scored. Like the number of opportunities that each team had and no one scored for the final 2+ minutes except for that Kyrie Irving triple.
Right. And LeBron just guiding that team to the championship again. That I think that was his best accomplishment of anything he's done is that championship. Because that was the one with the team that drafted him.
Mm. The 2000, was it 2010 NBA Finals between the Celtics and the Lakers? I think it was 2010. And that was the one in which the Celtics appeared to be running away with it in Game 7. And Kobe Bryant spurred this incredible comeback. It wasn't a real high-scoring game, if I remember, but it was the Lakers were able to come back from double figures down, and so it was pretty iconic.
83-79.
And it was a game, and the Lakers had home court advantage, but it was a game in which the Celtics, again, were well on their way in the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce era to winning a second title in 3 years, and then Kobe. That's got to be one of the games that I'll always remember about Kobe Bryant's career because of the stage and the magnitude of it.
Yeah, I think we have a good bunch of them, right, that we just talked about.
The documentary is called Game 7 on Amazon Prime, and I don't know which ones they cover. I've seen a couple of them, but not a lot of them, not all of them. And so it's a 5-part series that might be interesting for sports fans to check out. 855-212-4227 at Amy After Hours. Also, our Facebook page. A few minutes left to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Coming up, Jerry Jones returns to the radio, as does Aaron Rodgers. Certainly not the same reception for each. And also remembering Fernando Valenzuela. If you haven't heard, he passed away late on Tuesday evening. And all we know is that he was in an LA hospital. No other details have been released by the Dodgers. He was only 63 years old, and here they are about to play in the World Series again. This is a man who is just an icon for the organization and for so many Central and Latin American players. Just have heard Pedro Martinez talk about him so many times and the impact that he had on many other players that were coming from other countries and had hopes and dreams of succeeding in baseball here in the United States of America. So sad to hear about that for his family, certainly for those who loved him. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A lot of criticism that you guys didn't add, didn't spend, and don't add, and don't spend, and are not aggressive enough with some of the problems that are still haunting the Cowboys today that we see play out on the field. That's the point of talking about the offseason.
Oh, I remember those criticisms very well. Okay, so what?
Are they playing out to be accurate?
What's your point?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A week ago, Jerry Jones with Sean and RJ on our Dallas affiliate 105.3 The Fan. Boy, did that go viral. And I just say it's radio gold. As much as Jerry insinuated he would find other hosts to do his weekly radio show and that he paid them. Somehow they're on the payroll, which means they can only ask certain questions. Yeah, that only happens in news media. Just kidding. It probably does happen in other places too. But on this show, no one tells us what to talk about or what to ask. And I dare say that's the case with Sean and RJ as well. So when it came time for Jerry's weekly interview on Tuesday, there he was again, and he was much calmer.
I don't have anything to say about last week. I'm happy, though, that I must be tell you I'm surprised that last week got the attention it got.
Normally, we're usually on the same page in terms of the topics and the subjects. That's why I think last week threw us off a little bit. But look, man, as I've said multiple times, Jerry, you've provided us, you know, radio gold, and it is a privilege to be able to do this show with you for 15 years. And we had some fireworks, and that's kind of the way I view it, despite, you know, the payment and suspension and move the show and all that stuff, because we're usually in lockstep. So I understand that.
Listen, here's the thing. The fact that we've been doing it 15 years shows that someplace in between there, we got comfortable in our skin doing these type things, and we did get comfortable with it. Now, I'm tickled to death that we have as much interest in this as we do, and as you well know. But, guys, I have no issue, and you know that. As a matter of fact, you've said that. I have no issue with getting up in front of a bunch of media and people of journalism and asking the question and answering, getting questions and answering.
Yeah.
And I don't have any problem with that. Would you agree with that?
Yes, totally.
And again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but the point is that we've, in my mind, we're not playing very good football right now at all. And it's beyond whether or not we have Derrick Henry or not. Derrick Henry is having a career year. I don't know if he'd be having that career year in our situation.
So it sounds like they have kissed and made up in a manner of speaking, and Jerry is much calmer. I think a bye week can do that, though. We will see how quickly or if he gets fired up again. The questions, yeah, I mean, sometimes when you put yourself out there a lot. Maybe you get tired of hearing the rhetoric, the narrative, or you get tired of having to defend yourself, or sometimes you're just irritated and mad yourself, and so you take it out on other people, which is probably more likely what happened with Sean and RJ. So everything's fine there. No one's getting fired, suspended. No one's getting paid. No one's getting moved. No one's losing a job. I'm not even sure that Jerry Jones could do that. Could he overrule the program director of 105.3 The Fan? Sometimes it is about who you know, but let's hope that the PD would be more than willing to stand up for his guys, especially considering they've had a long tenure together. That's what we need as radio hosts. We need peeps to stand up for us. So coming up, we've got your opportunity to ask Amy anything. So get your last minute questions in at Amy After Hours, also on our Facebook page. Let's quick talk to Mark, who's in Omaha. Mark, welcome to the show. I'll give you about 90 seconds. Go.
Hey.
Hey.
Love the show, Amy.
Thank you
for having me. As far as the last segment in regards to the Game 7, how about the Oilers and Panthers? I mean, USA versus Canada, the longest travel distance of any final ever, and an epic Game 7. You have Bobrovsky making save game after game behind his back. Unbelievable. Barkov, all those guys going up against McDavid and Draisaitl, which I now believe has a, I don't know if it's Netflix, but there is a series that just came out on that Game 7.
Really?
And that series, yes.
Well, and I think the fact that the Panthers were playing against history, too, that they had had a 3-0 lead in the series, and the Oilers rattle off those three straight wins. So that, too. I mean, it wasn't a championship series, but a couple of years ago, the Miami Heat built a 3-0 lead against the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, only to see the Celtics come back and win three in a row, and then having to play that Game 7 on the road, Miami was able to prevail. So, yeah, I think that was another element, too, is do you really want to be that kind of dubious history if you're the Panthers and you collapse when you're one win away from a Stanley Cup?
Especially for a franchise that had never done anything in 30 years.
Right.
30 years. One Stanley Cup final appearance, but, I mean, almost had been the GOAT of the NHL for that long of a time period.
Yeah.
Going up against also a franchise with a ton of pressure on them as well.
Right, of course.
Edmonton Oilers.
And Bob, I just looked it up, 23 saves of the 24 shots he faced. So that's a great memory, Mark. Thanks for reminding us.
Yep, have a good night. Thank you.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Also, you know me, sometimes the intel in my brain, especially when I'm talking about history, it comes out not the way I intended. Of course, the Vikings have been to Super Bowls. They haven't won a Super Bowl. They have been multiple times. I remember when I was growing up and at 13 years old, I fell in love with the Denver Broncos and John Elway and his patented fourth quarter comebacks. And they went through a bunch of Super Bowl losses before they finally won at the end of his career. So I remember the pain and the angst as a young fan, but also hearing all the time, Broncos and Vikings, they've been to more Super Bowls and have lost more Super Bowls than any other franchise, which of course now the Broncos, they've got that because of the one with Peyton Manning, the Seahawks before they won again. So yeah, that's the dubious history we're talking about here. Straight ahead, your chance to ask Amy anything. Producer Pete has got your questions. Man, we've got so much still that we want to get to. I guess that's a good problem to have. Thank you for making it a good problem to have on the Hump Show. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, LeBron and Bronny James made history, first ever father-son duo to play together in the NBA as the Lakers erased the T-Wolves 110-103.
It's always been family over everything, and, you know, for me, I lost a lot of time because of this league and committing to this league, being on the road at times, missing a lot of his things, Bryce's things, Jerry's things. So to be able to have this moment where I'm working still and I can work alongside my son, it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever got from the man above, and I'm going to take full advantage of it.
LeBron on TNT at 16. Bronny missed his two shots, pulled down a rebound in his 3 minutes in the second quarter. Anthony Davis led the way with 36 points and 16 boards. Meanwhile, the T-Wolves also reportedly extended Rudy Gobert 3 years, $110 million. Celtics rose their 18th championship banner to the rafters, then went to work on dismantling the Knicks.
Ball in the hands of Tatum. He's already made eight threes. He moves it to Derek White, who adds another one of his own. Six threes for Derek White, eight threes for Jason Tatum. The Knicks have seven as a team, and the Celtics lead by 30 on opening night.
Celtics ripped the Knicks 132-109, leading by as many as 35. Call courtesy of the Celtics Radio Network. Jason Tatum led the way with 37 as Boston tied an NBA record 29 threes. Derek White, 24. Jaylen Brown added 23. NFL Saints and Alvin Kamara reportedly agreed to a two-year extension, $24.5 million. Meanwhile, no surprise, Bucks head coach Todd Bowles delivering the news for Chris Godwin.
He will be undergoing surgery very soon. He'll probably be out for the year. There's a chance if we make a late playoff run, he could be back.
As for Mike Evans, likely out at least 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones made plenty of headlines with his contentious interview last week. Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, but Jerry doesn't seem to understand the problem.
I don't have anything to say about last week. I'm happy, though, that I must be tell you I'm surprised that last week got the attention it got.
And the man who set the baseball world afire in 1981, Fernando Valenzuela, has died. Fernando Mania swept L.A. as he won Rookie of the Year in the Cy Young Award, helping the Dodgers to win a World Series championship, played 17 years, won 173 games. Valenzuela was 63. I'm Marco Belletti.
Sometimes we ask you questions, sometimes you ask us questions, and I know that in the past, especially with producer Pete, I've gone a little bit too long on the previous segment and not left him enough time, so I'm going to zip it, well, at least until he asks me a question, so that he can get started. But I do want to suggest, producer Pete,
okay,
one of the very popular video series that we've done on our YouTube channel is the video version of Ask Amy Anything. We've done usually one a quarter or two or three a year. Producer Jay loved to do those. That should be potentially the first video we throw up there.
You're reading my mind.
Now that we're working together, yes.
That's where that was my direction. Cool. I was going to go in for the first video, but you spoiled it.
No. Okay. It's still a thing.
Okay, very good. If your life was made into a movie, what three songs would be on the soundtrack? That's from Matthew on Twix.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one. Okay, so number one would have to be the Star Wars theme from John Williams. More appropriately, maybe even the Imperial March. And that's the song that my husband and I entered into the barn where we had our reception with lightsabers, actually. We picked that song and we kept it a secret. Nobody knew except for us and the DJ who played it, which was amazing. So it would have to be something from Star Wars, probably the Imperial March. My brother and I, we often send each other messages back and forth that are nothing but our versions of the Imperial March. Also, I would say a song like Amazing Grace, just because it's an iconic song. It's a hymn, but also it's truth. It's all truth. Amazing Grace is certainly one that I have listened to, or It Is Well With My Soul. Either one of those might be. And then let's see, another one. Oh, You May Be Right, I May Be Crazy. So that Billy Joel song is appropriate. Or Emotional Girl from Terry Clark, who's a country music singer. So those are two options as well.
Matthew also asks, what's the most useful thing you own?
The most useful thing I own?
Yes.
My car. And I do own it outright now. Princess Leia was paid off in 2022. I had a little party when I did that. It was pretty amazing. I was only two payments from paying her off anyway, but I was able to send a lump sum. So yes, Princess Leia is functional. She's useful. She just passed 172,000 miles. I have no idea where Penny and I would have been without her, but also where I would be now. She is my lifeline.
With the winter season coming very soon, will you and hubby go skiing or ice skating? That's from Todd on Facebook.
That's a good question. I am not a great ice skater, so I look like a baby giraffe on skates. It's not my thing. But I will say I'd be willing to do any snow activity with him. So if he wanted to go skiing and go to the bunny trails, I haven't skied in a long time. My basketball coaches put the kibosh on that when I was in college, and I just never went back to it. However, we are doing some hiking, some actual mountain climbing coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it might still be early for ice in the Catskill Mountains, but we'll see. I'm all into the winter stuff and the winter hiking. I love it. I think it's terrific. He's still got the thin Texas blood, and so maybe not as excited about being out in the cold, but he got a mild winter last year when he first moved to the Northeast. I'm hoping we get gobs of snow this year because it's my turn to be happy in the winter.
Do you watch any cooking competition shows, and do you have a favorite? That's from David.
Gosh, I've watched some of the Iron Chef in the past with my family, my brother's family. It's very intimidating. So I actually think it stresses me out. It makes me break out in hives when they do these cooking competitions. I can't imagine being under that kind of pressure. There's one that I've watched again with my brother's family, which is really stressful, and it's timed, and you have to come up with meals, and they make people cry. Let me see if I can remember the name of that. But no, actually, they stress me out, so I don't watch them.
Is that the one that has, like, the three tiers?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's with Gordon Ramsay. I don't know what it is.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Gordon Ramsay.
Yes.
Yes. He comes across very mean. Is it Kitchen Nightmare? Oh, Master Chef? Is it Master?
No, it's
Kitchen Nightmares.
Later on in his
Next Level Chef.
Yeah, I think it's that one.
Okay, yeah. So some of these, I'm telling you, I can't. I would crack under the pressure.
No. I'll be a taster, but no. you guys love Kevin Harlan.
Yes.
Now, which announcers do you dislike?
Oh, come on. You know I can't answer that.
I'm,
you can answer it if you want, Pete, but I'm not doing it. I have to be a professional. I can't tell you who I don't like.
Brad Weinstein. I don't like him.
Oh. Okay. All right. I know Bram from my previous network.
Probably a great guy. I don't think
he is a great guy. I can't disparage anyone. I tend to only stay positive. And my mom taught me if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. That's so I'm right. Just going to keep my mouth shut.
That's right. That's why.
Because if I say it, Pete, it goes viral. Uh-huh. So that's not a good idea.
And if I say it, it doesn't go viral. So
well,
I'll say it.
I mean, maybe I'm going to get in trouble because you said it on my show.
All right. What? Hang on here. But I lost. All right. What's been the most memorable interview you had, and who's on your wish list?
Oh, gosh. Well, on my wish list, actually, I was kind of surprised that Larry Bird wasn't in Boston when they did the banner raising on Tuesday night. He's always been on my wish list, along with John Elway. I would also really, really, really love to talk to Andrew Whitworth, who retired not that long ago, and then Draymond Green. So anytime you want to work on Draymond Green, who now is a permanent co-host on his podcast, did you see that? He's got a co-host who he's going to have with him all the time, a name that you all may remember. But those are kind of pie in the sky. It would be amazing if that happened. But I, you know, it's whatever. I'm okay if it doesn't. As for asking me my favorite interview of all time, it's impossible. That's, you know how many thousands of interviews I've done? It's impossible. I've got interviews that I'm so proud of, many of which are on our YouTube channel. I'll say a few that stood out to me. Really enjoyed talking to Sarah Thomas when she first got into the NFL. I met her at the Super Bowl, and then after she officiated the Super Bowl, she came on our radio show, so that was special. Dominique Mochianu, in the middle of the whole USA Gymnastics scandal, she was really pointed. I talked to Dallas Braden right after he came off the field from pitching a no-hitter on, you know, Mother's Day, and he had lost his mom. So there's I could go on and on about the interviews. We've talked to Hall of Famers, like Mean Joe Green. That was really cool. Champ Bailey recently. So, yeah, I can't pick a favorite. There are a lot of interviews I've done that have nothing to do with sports that I'm also really proud of. Like, for instance, when we had Frank Siller on the show on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, talking about his Tunnel to Towers Foundation in honor of his brother that they never recovered after he went running toward Ground Zero as a firefighter to try to help save people. So there are a lot of interviews that resonate with me. I can't possibly pick a favorite.
Any updates?
But if you want to get Draymond Green on the show, I would love that.
I'll give him a call right now. In this break.
That would be amazing. Yeah, he's now that he's got someone else with him, who is it that I'm drawing a blank. Oh, Baron Davis. So now that Baron's on the show, maybe he can take time off and come on our show.
Okay, very good. any updates on former producer Jay?
That's a good question. I know Jay was stressing over the NLCS because he's a big-time Mets fan. Also is embarrassed completely by the Giants and doesn't want to talk about them either. We have been playing phone tag, so we're supposed to talk this week. We just haven't been able to connect. I know he's still in the area. The last I knew, he was still looking for a job. So those are the only things I know. But I'll pass along an update when I have it.
I love it when you say, there goes the perfect show. That being said, do you ever have a perfect show? That's from Angus.
Oh, no, it's not possible. I have shows that I'm really proud of where I feel as though my brain and my mouth are completely in sync and we do good work here. A lot of the shows that I'm proud of, again, don't always have to do with sports, maybe have to do more with human interest. But in terms of a perfect show with me as the host speaking perfectly, it's not possible. I try to tell my students that you have to get rid of this idea of perfect. I'm a perfectionist and I will stress over the smallest little mistakes. I will beat myself up. I'm always harder on me than anybody else could be. So I had to let go of that, but understand that there can be humor in imperfection. So that's where I make fun of myself. I don't take myself too seriously. When I make up words, it's now become part of the show. When I screw up cliches, that's part of the show. So yeah, there can be beauty and fun and humor in the imperfection.
Speaking of humor, the next two questions.
Have
you played Marco Polo with Marco Belletti?
No, we don't have a pool in here. Wouldn't that be fun?
And what's your favorite type of light? A floodlight, spotlight, a flashlight, or a candlelight?
Candlelight. I like the mood of a candlelight, but also a really bright flashlight is functional, especially if you have a dog that goes outside late at night or if you live in a neighborhood where there aren't as many lights. Right now, that doesn't apply to me because our entire property is lit up by the neighbor's obnoxious light. And I'm telling you, more people ask me about that light than ask me about anything to do with the NFL, which I'm not sure what that says about me as a sports host, but okay.
Have you seen the new Beetlejuice movie yet?
I haven't. I never saw the original, even though I'm a Michael Keaton fan. But when we went to see the movie Reagan recently, so Bob and I went to see Reagan. It was awesome. They had the previews for that, and it just doesn't look interesting to me. A little bit too... I'm not into Halloween or horror. I'm not into gory movies or movies with monsters. It's just not my thing.
This question, I think, was asked a couple weeks ago, but I'm going to ask it again because we're in the season, and I like to talk
pumpkins.
About candy.
Oh, okay, candy.
What kind of candy do you give out to the kiddos on Halloween?
Well, this is a great time to ask the question because I just put in a candy order with Candy Warehouse. Yes, my hubs gave me, how does he know me? My love language is food. My other love language is sarcasm. But anyway, he gave me a gift certificate to Candy Warehouse, and I recently went and ordered a bunch of stuff. So Dove chocolates, love Dove chocolates. Couldn't find the Hershey's Gold, which is my favorite, but it wasn't available. Got a bunch of Sour Patch Kids because I also love Sour Patch candy. And then was able to snag some of the mini Kit Kats and mini Heath bars. So that's what I'll be making available to kids on Halloween. But you know what else? I'm baking cookies because I want them to have an option of grabbing a freshly baked oatmeal butterscotch cookie, which looks like Halloween because the chips are orange, or if they want, they can have boring candy. Now, I'm just warning you right now, if I don't give out the candy, it's all coming to work because I cannot have that kind of candy in my house. I'll turn into a blimp.
Well, we have a bunch of scavengers here, so yeah,
we do.
All go away.
Radio theme. If it's free, it's for me. Yes, you work in radio long enough. That's the common theme. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.